Welcome to another Vox Talk recorded at the CEPR Annual Symposium in Paris. My name is Tim Phillips. Global financial markets have been becoming increasingly integrated for several decades, but has that process gone into reverse? And what might be the consequences of what we now call financial deglobalization? That was the topic of an insightful panel during the symposium. And immediately afterwards, I caught up with two of the panelists. Linda Goldberg of the New York Fed and Sina Krogstrup, Governor of the Danish National Bank. Sina, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Linda, welcome as well.
Thank you.
Now, Linda, you have a disclaimer, don't you?
Everything I say are my views and not necessarily those of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York or Federal Reserve System.
Point taken. Why do we care about financial deglobalization? What has financial globalization done for us?
We've learned a lot in recent decades about the benefits of financial integration. Financing investment projects, supporting growth, efficient allocation of resources across borders. It helps us with diversification of risks, spreading the insurance of extreme events. There are intertemporal savings and consumption decisions that are facilitated, along with the financing of fiscal imbalances, and these are often at lower interest rates and longer maturities. There are flip sides to some of this, that there's exposure to potentially deeper credit cycles, spillovers of an exposure to external risks. This is in the realm of the global financial cycle discussion and boom-bust patterns in capital flows and exposures to foreign exchange conditions.
We're all worrying at the moment about financial deglobalization. Are we worrying with good cause? How much deglobalization has there been?
We could talk about the evidence that others have found. A lot of researchers are turning to this question. I think the evidence to date is more about fragmentation and moving more towards blocks as opposed to deglobalization specifically. From the IMF, work by IR, Malacrino, Presbytero, look a lot at foreign direct investment flows. Mm-hmm. They compare what happens in terms of countries that are distant from the U.S. geographically versus geopolitically. I think since maybe 2012, it's not such a recent phenomena. There's a movement that's more towards blocks, that more investment is flowing between geopolitically similar countries. Investment is going more towards friends, so to speak, than previously, which was more on geography. There's other evidence of researchers also taking place in equity fund flows. And then there is evidence from the Bank for International Settlements, Gets Van Peter, in cross-border lending. There's more sustained cross-border lending between the West countries and other West countries compared to what's going on West to what they call East countries.
Sina, you have responsibilities within the bank to maintain price stability, financial stability. What has been the impact that you have seen on price stability, for example, of these trends?
Let me start by saying that the specter of financial deglobalization that we start seeing some tendencies toward, but that we don't see full blown, this is not something that we used to worry about because we were in a different world. And that has completely changed. So yes. At central banks and also in our central bank, this is something that we have to address in all of our work. And as you mentioned, our goal, so price stability, financial stability, also in payments, we do see some of these tendencies and we also have to think about the risks that are coming up.
Yes, we assume that financial globalization would be a sort of inevitable process until fairly recently.
At least I think we cannot assume that, but it looks like we are heading in a certain direction and we need to consider those scenarios and we need to consider them in different ways. For price stability, globalization has been very important for Denmark in terms of boosting economic activity. It's been the basis of our prosperity. And it also has had effects on prices. So one of the reasons we had long period of growth and low inflation has also been that inflation has been kept in check by globalization process. And if we look at globalization in reverse in our models, we do find also the reverse effects. We would expect to have what we say as stagflationary effects. So we would see prices coming up and economic activity being dampened. But our models say that these are moderate effects within the scenarios that we consider.
Right. Financial stability.
Financial deglobalization could both benefit and challenge financial stability. But of course, we're always looking at the concerns. And the risk scenarios are that financial deglobalization or fragmentation would create more volatility, amplify shocks. We would have less risk sharing. And so this is a concern that we need to be prepared for. And I think in the world where we are concerned about this, it's even more important that we have well-capitalized banks, that we have a very sound international financial safety net to prop up countries that also could get into trouble, because the global financial system and financial stability is a global common good that we need to collaborate around.
That focus on bank capital has very much been in place since after the global financial crisis.
Right, yes.
And when we look at the role of banks in connecting us internationally, it's not just the policies that are in the country receiving funds, but importantly, it's in the countries that are the source countries for these funding flows. So bank capitalization, good health, good risk management practices in source countries of financial flows are really, really important for what happens to those financial flows under stress.
This is things that we've learned since the global financial crisis. We're more conscious of the potential problems. Payments.
So in payments, we also see tendencies toward fragmentation. It's not something that has been popping up in the last few years, but we have to go back further. If we look back to the financial crisis since then, we have seen a slimming of correspondent bank networks across the globe. So large banks that intermediate payments across borders, they have tended to reduce the number of correspondent banks that they have. And that has been on the basis of concern about risks, for instance, around AML, KYC, and also sanctions risk in different ways. This, of course, is something that reduces the efficiency of payments and is something that we should be concerned about. We also see that payments for that reason move into different types of networks. For instance, we see payments that are going through crypto networks. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to see how much that is, but this is something that we would be concerned about due to the low visibility, low transparency of such payments networks. And then we have countries that are also looking to develop new payment solutions that do not rely on existing correspondent bank networks. And it still remains to be seen what will come out of all that. An important point here that I want to make is that while we do see some tendency toward fragmentation in the payment space across borders globally, when we look closer to home in the Nordic countries where I'm from, but also in the EU generally, there is a lot of technological innovation and also a lot of institutional innovation that is deepening the ability for us to do cheap, efficient, fast cross-border payments.
So let me get an opinion from both of you to wrap this up. On the one hand, there are some things that we need to consider. On the other hand, as you say, perhaps some of the rhetoric about financial deglobalization has been exaggerated. When should we start to worry about financial deglobalization?
I would go back to where we started, which is on what are the benefits of financial globalization? We worry when capital doesn't flow to where the best investment opportunities are. When I say we, I mean systemically from a global financial order. Mm-hmm. When you don't have risk sharing, and that means that adverse events that hit different locations really will hit them much harder. There are many important benefits that are brought by globalization, and the unwinding could have serious effects. We also, as mentioned, it's important to have scenarios where you think about if it's not deglobalization and then it's blocks, what does that mean for all of the dynamics mm-hmm. in terms of economic co-movements and financial stability effects?
I fully agree, of course, with Linda. And I would just add that we need to be concerned with financial deglobalization and the risks involved. But we also need to focus on the fact that while there is this risk, there are also developments many places that go counter to that risk at the more regional level that Linda is also talking about. And if I look specifically at the Nordics and the EU, we have really a momentum for deepening integration in the EU, for instance. I would say that there are balancing forces, but we do need to be concerned about financial deglobalization.
Sina, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And Linda as well.
Great to chat. Thank you.
This has been a Vox Talk from the CEPR Paris Symposium 2024. Next week, how would a European climate bond work?